The year is 1622 and a man named Nicolas Berger is tasked by the French king at the time of mapping the entire Roman Empire of what was. He did just that, and he came up with a two-part 1,000 page document called Le Empire de Roman, or something like that. But in doing that, he made one small mistake, so subtle in its content that it still perpetrates itself today, 400 or so years on, in the media, and it's taken for granted as we speak. Welcome to the story of everything you know about Roman roads is wrong. I'll tell you the story of about five or six different myths as I walk along various Roman roads. First up, the Fosse Way. You have to forgive me because every so often I'll dive into a hedge just like this and show you a bit of Roman road. Here we are, a bit of the Fosse Way that isn't on a main road, and it isn't a main road today. The A37 is to the south of me, and this here is a significant part of the Fosse Way. Whilst we continue up the Fosse Way towards Beacon Hill, well, let's keep on point, because the first myth is the Gromer, and that the notion that all Roman roads were aligned using Gromers. Now, the use of Gromers isn't disputed in any way. There's archaeological evidence to suggest they were used. I think even a complete one was found in the remains of Pompeii. However, when you look at every video, every blog, every bit of article that writes about them, well, they all seem to gloss over one significant point. So a Gromer is a super useful surveying tool. Think plumb lines hanging from a cross in order to set a route against a fixed point in the distance, perhaps a beacon. This all adds up, and you can set off your many surveying underlings across the hills to line up dozens of these points. So as may become obvious, in order to use a Gromer effectively, well, you need to know with a fair degree of accuracy which direction you want to head in. That's not too difficult, but when I say a good degree of accuracy, not just the degree, you need to be absurdly accurate if you want to hit a straight line. It's 60 miles in the distance. So here we have two options. Number one, we rely heavily on beacons. Set fires along the route in the general direction, alter them as we go, and also as we reach our destination. Now, depending on the length of the route, this would take an absurd amount of time, truly. Even with an unlimited people to hand, you still have to relay messages, head back and forth, move, line up, repeat the process over and over. Number two, while we take a more accurate direction from the immediate point that we leave place A and do the same for place B at the same time, I still don't think we're going to be absolutely spot on. So the line is laid from each direction until it meets in the middle. Now this, in my opinion, unless absurdly accurate, would always lead to a very slight kink or change in the middle. And that is pretty much what we commonly see here in the south of the UK, at least. So yes, the Gromer was part of this bigger plan, but it's important to see it as one tool of many in various surveying methods of the Romans, rather than the be-all and end-all. There are three types of Roman road. You may not have heard of two of them. Number one, for foot traffic only, referred to as the iter. Number two, for the pack horse, the beast of burden, like a broader way of today, referred to as the Actus. And number three, the Via, the classic Roman road that we know and love for wheeled traffic. There's a great example just here in the hedge. You can see the Agger running down there, which raised up in the middle. And that's where this next myth starts, Roman road construction. Try googling Roman road construction and you'll get a whole load of results just like this. A 3 to 6 foot trench is dug, then filled with stones, the statumen, and then a fine layer of radius, and then the nucleus, and then the pavementum. Now, when you dig deep and you try and find evidence for this construction method on the Roman road, Well, you often go back to a first century writer, Marcus Vitruvius, and he wrote about these layers, so it all adds up. But there was one problem, which is where our friend Nicholas Berger possibly went wrong. Marcus Vitruvius wasn't talking about Roman roads, he was talking about architecture and how to build a villa and the foundations. So in 1617, Nicholas Berger's detailed study of the great Roman roads of the empire, well, he actually confused the words pavimentum, meaning floor, with the French word pave, meaning stone or paved road. This was all very odd on Nicholas Berger's part, because he even did excavations of Roman roads, just like this one here, and he never found one example that matched the description from Marcus Vitruvius. Even if you're doing a BTEC in college today on road construction, well, the main textbook still has diagrams and pictures on how Roman roads were built. You dig down 3 to 6 feet for your foundation. It's funny how that notion has been perpetrated for that time on, for the 400 years, and it still exists today in modern education. Now, here in Britain, in fact, let's go and have another look at this. Well, much archaeological evidence suggests that mainly the top layer of soil was scraped back perhaps 6 inches to a foot, and then filled with the more hardcore and finer layers on top. So what about the image of the paved Roman road, the romantic image? Nope. Again, something that's been perpetrated by the media for decades, that the whole Empire of Britain was paved on the main Roman roads. Just simply not true. Yes, perhaps more so as time went on in the towns and cities and the areas of populations or forts, but certainly not outside of those. Not one shred of evidence suggests that. There was once a question on QI hosted by Stephen Fry that went something like this.
Who invented straight roads?
But I felt a bit suspicious and I thought, well, the klaxon's gonna go off because that's the obvious answer.
The Romans.
Oh dear.
Well, Stephen Fry came to the conclusion that the Romans just built on top of ancient trackways. The work and the routes were already done for them. Now that notion has sat in my head probably for the last decade ever since, and it probably shouldn't be sat there for a number of reasons. So sit yourself down on Google and try and find evidence for this. Try and find archaeological papers which study this rather than just a passing mention. You probably won't, yet you'll find this repeated over and over by countless media outlets and blogs alike. But did it actually happen? Well, in part, yes. I think some of the larger routes, such as the Fosse Way or Watling Street, well, they certainly formed ancient trackways before the Roman roads. But consider the rest of the Roman road network and the wider context. Consider what an ancient trackway looks like, and again, its wider context. Pre-Roman Britain, and we have a number of tribes, and whilst trade took place throughout that era between those tribes, it's important to think of them as their own rule within their own empire. There would have been absolutely zero joined up thinking on routeways that would connect major settlements across those tribes. And yes, we did have things like the Ridgeway and the Path of Least Resistance for routes, but nothing quite like what the Roman Empire gave us thereafter. Consider this very Roman road, just sat here on the edge of the pathway that I'm walking on. This is the portway that goes from basically London through down to Sarum and onto Dorchester. Now, that forms a relatively straight line between each, as we've discussed. But also pre-Roman, well, they had the route, but they didn't. They had the Harrow Way, the Pilgrim's Way, and they really zigzagged their way across the country. Straight line, almost certainly not. Defensive, perhaps, yes. So yeah, the Romans did come along and broadly used the same route between town and town and resource to resource. But to imply they just built and upgraded on top of ancient trackways simply isn't true, and of course doing quite an injustice to the civilization that was the Roman Empire and its technology. So there was a viral tweet back in 2019, largely based on an early internet chainmail thingy, which gave the story of the modern railway gauge of 4 foot 8.5 inches and how it came from an Imperial War chariot. Now, these were apparently made just wide enough to fit two horses' backsides in. And of course, you can derive many amusing statements to link the two. It appears that the crux of this comes from a statement which reads, "The people that built the tramways and early railways used the same jigs and tools as they used to build wagons, which used the same wheel spacing." This is a massive assumption based on absolutely no evidence whatsoever, and assuming tools and jigs seemingly remained the same for centuries and potentially millennia. So how do we go about debunking this? Well, for a start, the UK used a wide variety of gauges in early railway years, so that statement falls apart just there without much effort. Now, it's stated that the wagon wheel spacing on a Roman wagon was tightly monitored and needed to be specific distance in order that the wagons did not break in the paved wheel ruts. This was the same throughout Europe, including Britain, it goes on to profess. Yeah, that's complete nonsense too. The implication it states is that these ruts were created by war chariots, and therefore the gauge has lived on ever since, and you can draw all kind of amusing sentences from that. Completely not true. If you'd like a full debunk of this, a very detailed one, I'll link below to railway engineer Gareth Dennis. Next up, maps. Not so much a myth as such, but perhaps a preconception of map and map usage. Now, I think with regards to maps, since the Roman times and today, we've kind of gone full circle. Let me explain what I mean. So let's say you were tasked with moving something on the Roman road network, maybe from, I don't know, let's say York to Silchester. Whether you were responsible for moving an army unit or working for the government on the Circus Publicus, whatever it be, you wouldn't be expected to whop out a huge map and navigate your way. You would have what was referred to as an itinerary. And then, of course, came the 1800s and the need to map every corner, every hill, every forest, every road in this country, largely for military purposes in its early days. The likes of William Roy mapping Scotland gave the birth of the Ordnance Survey, and on then for the next 200 years. Even when I was a kid growing up, I had my OS maps and I'd cycle everywhere I possibly could, looking at a map flat on a table, where do I go next? But now, perhaps if it wasn't for an education system which taught me that, I wouldn't really have a need for that flat table map. I wouldn't have a need for that at all, because I'll just plumb in my location on a sat nav or Google Maps and I'll just use that as an itinerary. So I've been Paul, I hope you've enjoyed something a little bit different today with the Roman myths. If you like what you see and you want to see some behind the scenes waffle with me and Rebecca, then obviously you can sign up to our Patreon or the members by clicking on a couple of the links in the description below. See you this time next week, or whenever the next video's out.